No, I just had a question, and like Peter said, I think we both have to leave a little early. But you know, we're trying to work through what we're working through with the three from a governmental standpoint, and I believe we're making progress with that. But as we've talked, that is a process as you work through that three. I was wondering about the role of the seven as you try to set the seven in place. How does the three and the seven, and kind of give us a little bit of insight as to how we would develop the seven that you've talked about and, you know, shared about several times.
Okay, yeah. Right, well, there's a sense where the bench of three has the blueprint. They have to carry the blueprint in their heart, and then they begin to outwork that blueprint to establish it from the governmental position in the sense of the king, prophet, apostolic function. So if the blueprint isn't in the hearts of the three, then the connection to that angel of the house, fourth connection, will be difficult. And you need the interaction between agreement in heaven and then outworking on the earth in practice, and that's where the angel of the house comes in to see from the apostolic prophetic perspective, and therefore to priestly function to begin to bring agreement on earth. Now, in an ecclesia type setting, then the seven are sort of officers of the house, if you like. Their responsibility is to take the blueprint that contains the vision and the values of the vision that God's been given, and then create an environment where that gets outworked on the ground in people, so that people then embrace the vision and the values, and they begin to outwork as living stones their part in the blueprint, so that they're occupying the shadow that's formed on the earth, so that that can become an outworking of God's will and purpose for that blueprint that's been given. So to do that, you have to cast vision. Yeah, the only way you're going to see who catches the heart of the vision and the values, and they embrace it as in their own hearts, and they have a desire to be part of outworking that vision and values, then you have to share it. And you have to share it a number of times in a number of different ways, both individually, talking with people, and it should be so part of our hearts that it just can't, we can't stop it coming out of us. Because that's what it is to carry government towards it. We have to have cultivated the desire for it so that it's just us. And we just share it, we live it, we demonstrate it. When everyone pokes us, it just comes out. When everyone pushes our buttons, it just comes out. They cut us through, and we're that all the way through. Because that's the nature of that carrying that government, developing it, and cultivating the desire. That's how it could be. There's no room for an awful lot else, because that is who we are. I mean, you don't get called to an apostolic governmental role in that dimension unless you're committed to outwork it, and you know, that takes time, that takes commitment, prioritizing, being able to share with others with passion and zeal and enthusiasm, yes, with our own redemptive gift, and in our own sphere we'll share maybe the kingly or the apostolic or the prophetic nature of it, but we share. And then you're really looking for those who you identify, catch that heart, and carry the same commitment for it. And then you begin to work with them, and you then go through the same process with them that you go through with the three and four. You then create a culture of honor. You go through all the different issues of different redemptive gifts. Because hopefully within that seven, you ideally you would get at least sort of, you know, mercy, servant, giver, exhorter, and you'd hope that there would be some teacher, prophet, and potentially some ruler there somewhere. If sometimes the ruler and the sort of that prophet type function comes out of the bench of three more, but ideally you would want a sort of a cross section of different sort of people. If you have seven mercy gifts, you won't get much done, you know. You just won't. If you have seven exhorters, you won't get much done because they just get totally distracted in doing exhorting people, and they're not time sensitive. If you need time sensitive things, you need someone who has a gift to bring those things. So recognizing the different gifts and recognizing the different redemptive gifts, honoring them, seeing a team come together who recognize each other's different parts, who connect through the angel of the house, so that the angel of the house is ensuring that the seven don't get sidetracked on minor issues, but keep the bigger picture in place, so that every time you make a decision, it's like, does this serve the blueprint? It's like, if the blueprint has nothing on it to do with missionaries, and someone keeps saying, well, actually, we want to send missionaries to Africa, then you got to say, actually, it's not on our blueprint. So at this point in time, unless it's part of one of the other mountains somewhere, actually, that is not our priority. Our priority is to create the environment where the vision and values begin to get outworked. Then, after you have the environment there, then you look then to establish the seven mountains. And you go through the same thing with them. You share the vision of the seven mountains without the detail of it, because it's not your responsibility to find the detail of it unless you're on one of them. Although you may have insight into some things, but you begin to share the principles. Hey, we have seven spheres of government that look a little bit like this, 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 and this. And we're calling and releasing a sound to see who feels called to any of those mountains. You know, anyone feel called to this area, and you begin to see who starts to emerge from that, you know, and then you go through the same process with them, and you help them find two others to find their mountain. And we're going through this process right now, you know, every other week. Basically, someone is sharing from the one of the seven mountains, and a couple of times a couple of people shared. And then it's like they're now beginning to establish government, and it's changed things completely significantly in terms of simply because they've come out and started to bring government rather than it just coming through the three of us. And so we've released them into the establishing that. Now then they're part of a council of 12 that carries the overall government as a sort of a apostolic council that looks at the outward direction of things, looks at the bigger scope of things and how that vision is going to be fulfilled, you know. And just like the apostles were, you know, Peter, James, and John were sort of three, and then there was the other nine, they made up a 12. And so there's that, but that's down the line, you know. The first thing is you establish the first seven, and to get a first seven, you have to have more than, you have to have 10 people at least. Otherwise, you aren't going to have a seven and a 10 and a three, you know. So, in a sense, the priority is to begin to vision cast, to draw people around. This is what the blueprint is, and God has called us to establish this ecclesia. Therefore, we have to share that with people to draw people into, hey, I would like to be part of that, or actually, my spirit has been stirred recently. Whatever it might be, whatever God does, send the angels out to gather them in. It has to be the priority to establish that foundation. Otherwise, in reality, you have no one to administer the mountains because you won't have any quorum. You know, there needed to be 10 to establish a house. You know, now, you know, sometimes they didn't have a bench of three for every house, so they had some that were regionally able to come in and bring when they initially did it, you know. And you know, some synagogues in the Hebrew culture didn't have that many because they were in small places. So they had mobile benches of three that came around and provided the government to support the house until the house provided its own bench of three and grew. And some of the, you know, some of the perspective of that is how they establish things. The key is it has to be a priority, and if you carry the government, then you'll be willing to sacrifice for its establishment, and that's a critical part. You know, I've had to sacrifice all sorts of things I would like to do and would quite fancy doing because I haven't got time to do them because this is my priority. You know, I've had to sacrifice even the things I do here locally to serve the bigger vision of reaching out as an apostolic resource to the world, hence what I'm doing. I mean, 2 years ago, I would have not been connecting with anyone else around the world other than by a few people on a forum, you know, which was, you know, 10 minutes, 15 minutes a week answering questions. You know, now, you know, majority of my time is spent doing that. Well, I've had to personally sacrifice, and the church here has also made that sacrifice to say, we release this to the bigger vision that we're a part of, that our mountains are to, in the context of being an apostolic resource for the world. So there's a sense of sacrifice. So I don't spend anywhere near as time, or actually no time, ministering to people, where I would probably have spent maybe 30, 40% of my time actually ministering to people, actually helping them through stuff, counseling them, doing different things. No, I've taught others to do that, and so we have a team of people who can do that, but I don't do that anymore because I had to make choices of prioritizing what are the priorities to enable me to fulfill my destiny and the purpose of God for me, and therefore, you know, I haven't got any time that's my own. As far as I'm concerned, it's like everything I have, I belongs to God. Everything I own belongs to Him. All that I am belongs to Him. And if He allows me to have some rest period, which is in His Word, so He gives me some rest period, and, you know, and even in that rest period, I spend most of my time thinking about Him and stuff. So, and I love it. You know, there's no burden for it because it's in my heart. It's who I am. Now, that it didn't used to be like that. Sometimes it was like, oh, this is so flipping hard work. People, wouldn't it be great if it wasn't for people? You know, and I would get sort of like, oh, you know, me and God's great. Everyone else, what a pain. You know, and you know, I've got to be honest. That's what I felt like at times because it was frustrating when people weren't as committed and passionate as I was, you know. And so I've grown into, so in my own life, it becoming who I am, you know, not that I get my identity from what I'm doing it because that's who I am. It's my destiny to do it. It just feels so natural for me to do it. Whereas previously, you know, it wasn't always like that. Because I hadn't cultivated necessarily the fullness of that identity and knowing what that identity was. And that really is why I'm willing to pay whatever cost it takes for anything that God says to do. You know, and if that means time consequence, great, I'll pay the cost. It is, because for me, I establish my relationship with God by getting up early to spend time with Him so that I can do this in the same time period that everyone else can do it to establish that. You know, people wouldn't have no problem if I spent time in my day in doing what I do, but actually I know that I need to do it so that it's possible for everybody else. So I spend that time. I mean, you know, I woke up.
I guess we lost Mike. Your mic's, you're muted. I can't hear you.
I guess he'll be back. We don't have much time, do we, Peter?
No, I got to leave in about 10 minutes.
Well, make sure I know what to do.
I do, too. I think that I was just kind of trying to get some guidelines on the 7 because it looks like that's kind of where it sounds like the 7 doesn't really have anything to do with the 7 mountains. It's 7 other people. Some could have a mountain. Is that how you understood it?
Yeah, that kind of sounds like that, yeah.
So yeah. I guess that's our next step, don't you think?
Yeah. Well, I think God's got the people. Can you hear me, Peter?
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah.
I'm really excited. You can tell that, you know, there's some people are coming. Okay, never mind.
Here comes Mike.
Where?
I think he's coming. I see his picture.
That's usually a good sign.
Well, when y'all get off, I'm getting off.
There he is.
Okay.
Morning.
Okay, yeah, I'm back. So, yeah, I mean, I'm willing to pay whatever cost. You know, this morning when I was engaging, I woke up 10 to 5. I immediately was awake because God started to do some stuff. And there's no cost to that for me. It's like I'll do whatever it takes to develop my relationship, to cultivate the desire, you know, to open that up. That's just how it is. So when it comes then to, okay, what does it take to establish a group of seven? It establishes the bench of three to invest time into them relationally and in investment of practice and mentoring. You know, I mentor our leadership team, wider leadership team, every 2 weeks on a Monday night. Every other Monday night, we get together and we outwork leadership. So that's just the commitment it takes to begin to invest in people. And at times we do other things, like spend time with each other and have meals with each other and do other things. Now, a lot of us have got a lot of years of history with one another, so, you know, that can be a good thing. Sometimes it can be a bad thing. You have to work out various things of familiarity and all sorts of things. But the reality is, if you're going to establish the seven, you have to invest in them, sharing the vision so that they catch that vision and then they're willing to outwork that vision themselves. In who they are, not in a sense where you're trying to pigeonhole into something they're not, but you want to identify the people that it is their destiny to be part of that. And then, you know, then you can do that in lots of different ways, identifying them. You basically can go into heaven and you can ask God to show you who they are. That's what I do. You know, and, you know, now sometimes those things are not permanent things. They are things that stepping stones that get you somewhere, and then other people come forward and personnel changes take place as people move into different things. You know, we've got some now of our original bench of seven who are actually now on their mountains, and that's becoming the priority for them, so they're no longer part of the bench of seven, and we've drawn other people into the bench of seven so that then they can take the priority for bringing on mountains because they know that that is their major call, you know, and a couple of them are in both because they feel that they're able to do both. It does, you know, it does need investment. You know, you cannot have a bench, and then when that bench does come together, they need to invest time with each other, you know, in developing the culture of honor themselves, you know, apart from that. You know, originally, we used to meet as 10 regularly. You know, we would get the seven and the three together every couple of weeks, and we would actually continue to share the blueprint, do things together by stepping into heaven. We would go and get a mandate for certain things, practice engaging how we bring government in this way, just do it together, you know, go to the courts together, deal with obstacles and blockages and issues that are in the way of us establishing what God's purposes are. Because in the light of this, the enemy is not going to hide away and not do anything. The enemy will do everything he possibly can to disrupt relationships, to cause frustration, to cause separation, to cause any of those things to stop the unity that is required to bring government. Because you have to be one. You know, it doesn't work by majority. It needs to be unanimous. And therefore, if you can't agree unanimously over something, then you can't do it, you know, and that's why it takes the time to develop that coming from the perspective of bringing that unity out in our relationships, you know. So it requires a lot. But once you have it, then they carry the stuff that allows the three then to bring more governmental things and to establish the mountains and then move on to establish a bench of 12. You know, so you have to do it, you have to do the priority order. You know, you can't establish the mountains before you have the blueprint and established with the seven unless you're not an ecclesia. If you're not an ecclesia, then you don't have the seven in that way. You have the seven mountains that you focus on. But if you're an ecclesia, you have to have an outworking of the government of God on the ground in reality. There we go. Can't really add much more to that, I don't think. But.
Now, that's good, Mike. I think it gives a lot of clarity because sometimes you get some confusion between the seven and the seven mountains. I think that's kind of brings some clarity as to the seven function plus the seven mountain functions can be different, can be the same, can be fluid to move from one to the other.
Yeah, that's
good. So I think that's good. I appreciate it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's been our experience. I mean, you know, we've had several goes at this because it's not easy to do. You know, even though I sort of carry an understanding of it, it's still not easy because people still have old mindsets. They still have old leadership models. They still have old ways of doing it, which basically is a talking shop. Oh, well, we'll talk around it until we find a solution. Then we'll do the best we can. Well, the reality is we have to learn to engage heaven to do it. We step into heaven, we get the heavenly strategy, we bring that, and we facilitate that, and that's the key, you know. And so not everyone who says yes necessarily will stay the course because they may not have the commitment it takes to stay the course, but that's okay. You know, that we're all on a journey, and that there's a journey, and there are stepping stones towards it. When I look back over my journey, if I chose that, I wouldn't have gone that way. You know, I wouldn't have gone that path that I took. I would have gone straight. But I would have missed out on everything on that pathway that was all preparation for when I was going to get to where I was going to go. You know, and it's important to see that you will, what seems like make mistakes or choose to do things, but then later on you decide, no, we're not going to do that anymore. It isn't about mistakes. It's about making sure you do the right things for the right time and then hold them lightly enough to be able to let them go when the time comes to move on into another thing. And because there's a never-ending increase to his government, that means we don't yet know it all, and therefore even what I'm doing now, I know that I will have different understanding in the future because there will be greater progressive relation of things that I don't yet have. Now, I'm not going to beat myself up about it because reality is I'm operating out of the revelation I've got, and that's all I'm responsible for. As soon as I've got fresh revelation, then I'm now accountable and responsible for that revelation. You know, so it's just as a journey, there are lots of things which are temporary. You know, Abraham went to lots of different places before he got to the promised land. The children of Israel also did. You know, for their own reasons. They didn't have to, but they did. You know, but they still had certain places even when they crossed. You know, they didn't cross over the Jordan and go immediately and take Jericho down. They went to a place called Gilgal. And there was where the reproach got rolled away and of Egypt and where a reestablishing of the Passover and circumcision took place. So, you know, it wouldn't be my choice before I was going into battle to be circumcised. You know, it would have been pretty, I mean, ladies, you know, basically you don't understand what that might do, but the reality is it's like you wouldn't want to go to battle having that done, but God chose to do it that way. And so at Gilgal was a place where it was like prepare yourself for tomorrow. God will do wonders amongst you. So there is a preparation in all these things that we work out. And some of those things are temporary. They never did it again, but it was part of their journey. You know, they never did another Jericho again that's recorded. They didn't march around other things. They look for a fresh strategy because it was always an ongoing dependence on listening and hearing God and then putting that into practice and moving forward, you know, and eventually they took the land and they parceled it out. They didn't do that immediately until they conquered the whole. So there are certain things, until you've established the whole, you can't actually do, which is why it's important to get that seven established first, and that enables you to do other things. But, you know, it is a journey. You know, I'm sure I'll make more mistakes than I've made already, but I learn from them. You know, I want to learn. I don't see them as negative. I see them, hey, I've now learned I won't do it that way next time, you know, or I'll learn to do it better next time. Because sometimes I do the right things, but I actually do it in the wrong way, which usually comes out of frustration or annoyance with people. And so I can do things in a way which is probably not the best mercy way of dealing with it, you know. But I have to learn to actually see, you have to bring mercy into certain situations, otherwise people don't receive it very well, you know. And I can think, I've been in our leadership meetings and I've been there thinking I'm talking really nicely and just sharing something, whatever, and afterwards people feel told off, you know. It was never my intention to tell them off. I didn't have it in my heart to tell them off, but my manner must have been such that they took the impression that I was telling them off. Now, A, they need to get over themselves, but B, I need to learn to present some things better and learn to be more sensitive to how to help people embrace something, you know, because the seven are accountable for the vision and values to the three. And so the three will have every right to say to the seven, how is the vision going? Do people embrace it? Are people doing this? How's this going? Now, if every time you ask the question, they get all sort of like, oh, no, I'm feeling really insecure because I'm not sure I'm doing a good job and this. You've got to give people permission to make mistakes. It's like, you know they're going to make mistakes, so you give people to make mistakes to start with, and then you say, look, if you make a mistake, let's come and talk about it. Let's learn from it. Let's grow from it. You're not going to be punished. There's going to be no discipline involved in this unless you go off and commit adultery or do something like that. The reality is the mistakes that we make in looking to do things the right way, we learn from. You know, and so a culture that's open like that to see, look, we have no manual yet that says how to do these things. You know, I mean, I guess I'll write some of this stuff when it comes to doing some of the governmental stuff. I suppose some of this stuff will come out later on in the Engaging God manual. But right now, it's like there are only a few places that are looking to establish these things. You know, there's only one place I know that actually has established this from the ground up with nothing. You know, and I envy them, to be honest, because they've been able to do things at a foundational level, and they've spent virtually 9 months with three and seven or so just getting together and meeting together and worshiping together and just going to heaven together and seeking the blueprint together and seeking the scrolls of each mountain together. They just did that without having to do anything else. Now, that's the way really to do it, you know, but hey, we've got to find where we are, and we all have to transition different ways because we're in different situations and different perspectives, and we've got to find a way that can bring anything from the old to cross over into the new. You know, otherwise, there's going to be a whole load of things left in the wilderness, and we want to cross over into the new of our inheritance spiritually so that we can outwork that. You know, so it's good. Yeah.
Mike, that was great, but I have to go. I have an appointment I couldn't get out of this morning, so you all are welcome to stick around, John or even Ann. I know AC might have to go, but, man, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Okay, welcome. Okay. So any other question?
Okay. I'll ask a question. Okay, about the seven, I'm really excited because right now on our little ecclesia, it seems like the people that God's drawing right now, it's going to be real tight. It's getting real tight, and there's some other people we know that are going to come. But I kind of like the fact that the smallness really allows a lot of interaction, a lot of intimacy together, and so I think God's perfect. You know, His timing's perfect. So I just like the fact that what those other ones did, they just allowed the 10 to really become relational and go to heaven together, and so the foundation's really getting set. Yeah. So.
That's. There's something to be said for being able to establish the relationships needed that will stand the test of time and will be able to overcome the obstacles that come. You know, there's always going to be, if you think about it, there's always going to be issues that come up that you have to deal with, that you have to overcome them, you have to work it through relationally. You know, it's like, because it has to be a model for the rest of the body. And the rest of the body are not always going to be at one with one another. They have to find ways to becoming one with one another, overcoming difficulties, overcoming differences, respecting each other, learning to represent the different gifts, not be frustrated when people, you know, are coming from a mercy gift and some are coming from a rulership gift and it's like, well, they seem to clash. No, they're just different perspectives that you need to be able to bring into a situation to get the whole picture. You know, so yeah, it's good to be able to invest in the relationships that are needed to be able to then work through the culture of honor and to identify what are the problems. Let's deal with the problem, not the person. It's not personal. We're looking to deal with the problems and stumbling blocks that actually are in the way of fulfilling God's purpose. So that takes time, you know, and I would encourage everyone to invest the time it takes. You know, and however long it takes, it's not a race. You know, in a sense, it's like it may be seen as a race biblically, but actually, it's not a sprint. Right? It's a marathon. You know, I'd rather be going after 26 miles than stopping after 100 meters. You know, so that for me is the key, working it through so that we can last the course and fulfill the race, you know.
Yeah, I appreciated what you said the other day. Like you said, well, I would be surprised if you didn't have things you had to work on, you know. Yeah. I mean, reality people are just who they are, and we are who we are, but we're going to work at our salvation with fear and trembling in our relationships, and, you know, I'm in it. For the gold, you know. So it's pretty awesome. I mean, I'm really excited about it. I'm really excited about Sunday. I'm really excited about what God's doing. The pattern. I mean, you have anything to say there, John? Is John there? Anyway,
I'm here. I do have one question. There was a interview that Peter posted on Facebook with Bishop Mark Corona and another guy, Dr. O. I don't remember exactly what his last name is, but anyway, he was talking about worship and how that there's a lot that gets birthed from worship. From it comes out of heaven, but that we really haven't learned how to harvest, for the most part, the things that come out of worship. And he gave some examples of, you know, different revivals like Jesus Movement and how technology and computers and things really kind of got launched, and how there's always like industrial and technology advancements with different revivals and different things like that. And so I don't know. It was just a real intriguing conversation about, you know, that Christians really don't know how to harvest what comes out of worship. And so, I don't know. I kind of want to get your feedback on that, if that makes sense or not.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think in its broadest sense, obviously worship is way beyond what we would say is our praise singing times. Worship really is an obedience to God, a obeying his will and purpose. So often we can engage with him when there's a corporate sense of being gathered, and sometimes in that corporate sense you do get a prophetic release, you get an engagement with the angelic messengers, because there's a multiplication that comes when we corporately come together. You know, one puts 1,000 to flight, but 2 10,000. Well, 3 can put then 100,000, because it's a tenfold exponential thing. So when you get people come together with the same heart and they're releasing stuff into the atmosphere rather than sucking stuff from the atmosphere, then you are going to be able to hear what God is saying in that and then take it seriously. I think probably a lot of our worship, traditional worship church type settings, are where people's view is they're coming to get a shot in the arm, they're coming to get their weekly fix so that they can cope for the rest of the week, rather than, no, I'm coming to lay my life down before God and his throne and invest myself in honor and love to him, you know, and surrender to him and his purpose in my life. And so I think a lot of what we would class as worship would be really singing. And for people, therefore, to be thinking that is what's going to give them their boost. Well, the reality is all they're doing is sucking out of the atmosphere that which other people have put into it, you know. And then a lot of that means that the atmosphere becomes equal or worse. Those are more people putting at taking out of the atmosphere than are putting into it. So it becomes empty after a while. And so when, in that situation, yeah, it's very difficult to harvest the revelation that's been brought, because people aren't actually looking for what they can give into it. They're looking for what they can get out of it. And that's a whole different ballgame, you know. And when we learn to come, when we corporately gather, to release into it because of what we're carrying and what we're flowing from the inside, then I think we will get all sorts of revelatory things, assignments. When we learn to step into heaven together, when we come together, we will get the assignments that come out of heaven. You know, there are a number of things in the Word of God where you see God saying, well, who are we going to send? You know, even in the sense of when we come into the temple and we embrace the altar, there was this, woe is me, I'm undone, I'm unraveled. But then at the end of it was, God says, well, who's going to go for us? And Isaiah says, yeah, here I am, send me. Obviously, as in a sense, forerunner for what happened with Jesus. Here I am, send me. And God is looking for that level of response. Hey, I'm available. So worship is making myself available to serve the purposes of God. And if you think of Romans 12, 1 and 2, where it talks about our spiritual service of worship, actually same word, service, worship, exactly the same Greek word, it really comes out of, I present myself as a living sacrifice so that I can know what his perfect will is, therefore then I can serve that will by being obedient. That is my worship, is to do the will of God. And so a lot of even understanding of worship as a word, I think, has been lost in our sort of church cultural, well, we worship when we sing on a Sunday. Well, actually, really, we don't. We may adore God or show gratitude to him or praise him, but it really isn't worship. Worship is when we actually bow down and say, I surrender to you, to what you want me to do. And for that to take place, of course, there has to be a living sacrifice bit in the middle, which means we are not conformed to the world, but are transformed by the renewing of our mind, so that we be conformed to the image of Jesus. So, you know, there's a lot to that. Do I believe that there is revelation from heaven that is released when we come together like that? Absolutely. I think in the environment where the creative light of God is in operation, we should be getting all sorts of revelatory things. Some of those bringing, you know, as the Bible call it, witty inventions that will release us to be able to do things. Yeah, lots of different things there. How do we harvest it? Well, we first have to recognize what God is saying. And that means we're listening to him rather than talking to him. You know, someone said once, we've got two ears and one mouth because we should do twice as much listening as we do talking. But when we come before God, how much are we just singing to him and talking to him? How much are we listening? I think we need to spend a lot more time in that sense of awe of just coming into his presence and be like, wow, I don't have to say anything here. I'm just in this atmosphere of intimacy. And I think out of that place, usually around the ark of the presence of God, then things get released. You look into and see into the revelation of new things, new ways of doing things, fresh understanding of things. You know, it's like a lot of the churches that are sort of do this sort of style of worship, they've not changed for hundreds of years. So they're not receiving any transforming revelation about how they should do things and what they should do. You know, you go back 200 years and they would actually look much the same as they do now. What the format of things, or the liturgy of things. You know, I'm not knocking liturgy. You know, I've been in situations where there's been liturgy and I've been able to hear God through it because I'm embracing what's behind the sort of system of it. But a lot of people can't do that, and therefore they're not able to receive. You know, because I think if we're honestly before God, we should be totally changing all the time. Because there's no end to the increase of his government, therefore there's no end to the progressive revelation that he wants to bring so that we can be more and more like him, reflecting what it is in heaven on earth. Or how many of our church services really reflect what it's like in heaven on earth? They should do, and I guess some of them more and more are, but actually a lot of them still aren't. So my understanding would be in this, actually, if we surrender in the presence of God, then we will find some awesome revelation about chance, what we do, what things look like, how we do things, so that we're not just going on tradition, but always on revelation, you know, and be open for revelation to change what we do. Otherwise, why would we want something new if we're happy with what we've got in the old? It's when we become dissatisfied, or that no longer functions, or that no longer does what it should do, or it doesn't do it quick enough, or it doesn't do it fast enough. A lot of this stuff has come from, hey, you know, we were plowing the field with a plow and a horse or oxen for a long time until we discovered we needed to get more crops out of the ground. We need a faster way of doing it, so let's use steam power to draw the plows, and then we can plow 10 times faster. And then steam power, that's not fast enough. Hey, let's get petrol power or gasoline power. Now we can go even faster, you know. So those things come out of a desire to do things better. I think a lot of the church sort of, let's say, religious system is very content to keep things as it was and maintain the status quo so everyone's comfortable and everyone's sort of happy. And the reality is, you know, I don't know who said it, but someone said constant change is here to stay, which is a oxymoron, I guess, in one sense, but actually it highlights the fact that in reality we should be constantly changing and never satisfied with what we are, although we can be content in our relationship that's leading us deeper, if that makes sense.
So, yeah, no, it's good, Mike.
Okay. Right, okay. Anything else? Anyone want to ask anything else?
I have another quick question. If you do not answer,
Carry on.
Okay. And I'm sure you've explained this in a gazillion of your hangouts, but, you know, gathering around the ark to really get your daily mandate and just have direction in general, you know, I'm just finding it to be a bit ambiguous, or it's not a process that I'm really getting, I suppose.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know, maybe you can talk about it just briefly.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Well, it's a process, again, that comes out of what do we do when we engage in the realms of heaven. If we're engaging for responsibility and rulership, then that only comes proportional to the holiness that's in our lives. So when we step into the realm of heaven, we're engaging the tabernacle, and the first thing we hit is the cross. It's like, I can't go into the realms of heaven without coming through the veil, which is represented by Jesus' flesh on the cross. And therefore, if I don't embrace the cross, then I'm not going to get too much further. So I need to present myself as a living sacrifice, deny myself, take up the cross and follow him, reckon myself dead to sin and alive to him, because I've been crucified with Christ. It's no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. And now the life that literally we now live, because now we're becoming one together, now that can be lived by faith of the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me, so that I can love him and give myself to him and surrender. And as I present myself as that sacrifice, and go through the process to then eventually get through the veil of the way, the truth, to enter into the life around the ark, I'm at a place where I only want to do what I see him doing. My headship is him. He places the government on my shoulders, but he's the head. So it's not my will, but yours be done. So when I get around the presence of God there, I'm really surrendered, you know, and it's like, therefore, my desire is for his will. Now, that was my first level of engagement around the ark, was, okay, the ark has three things in it, the manna, the tablets, and the rod. They represented the will of God. His food, you know, is to do the will of God. Jesus said, my food is to do the will of him who sent me. So the manna represents the will of God. So, you know, in from that perspective, you know, I started to look into the different perspectives of the lion, the ox, the eagle, and the man, seeing into the prophetic, into the apostolic more. You know, I would be drawn to one more than the other, usually the eagle and the apostolic, but I learned to engage all of them. You know, and that took me more into intimacy. I then started to cultivate desire from that place. That's when I'd learned to cultivate the desire for the purposes of God, my destiny, to begin to go deeper with it, to see it from different perspectives, to see how it fitted into the bigger picture. I was no longer just looking at, you know, in a sense, not just looking at what does God want me today, but actually how does my life work and fulfill the purpose of God? How does my life bring lordship and kingship, and how do I become a son? So that's really what I started to do when I looked into the four faces of God. And ultimately, at another level, then I step into, because I'm in him, I can step into him there and step into his presence, and I can then begin to see from that perspective. And then I was able to look into what was and engage in his heart, begin to see things from the beginning so that I could recognize what his desires were for me, what I look like then, if I don't look like now what he saw me as then, then I've got more transformation to take place in my life. I began to look at what does my mountain look like from his eternal perspective, and then that enables me to bring what was into what is, to shape my day, and then to change what will be tomorrow. And it will, because if I am changing today according to what was, then what will be is bound to be different because I will be different tomorrow. So I'm writing the future by looking into what was and bringing it into what is. And so I ask questions like that. You know, how does it function? God, show me what I look like. Take me into your heart. You know, how do I look like from the lion perspective or the ox perspective or the eagle perspective? You know, what does my ministry look like, my calling, my destiny look like from higher up so I can look down and see the bigger picture? I just ask questions like that. Show me. You know, give me revelation. You know, what am I supposed to be? Who am I supposed to be? Just questions and seeking for revelation that comes by going deeper, you know, and being in him. Now, if I'm in him, in reality, if I think I'm in him, so I'm in the Holy Spirit and I'm in Jesus and I'm in the Father, then I've got 9 layers of armor over me to protect me. So I'm safe and secure in that place, you know. And so I just look, you know, and I still practice this. I still do this every day. It's my desire to get deeper and deeper with God, to know him more, to experience him more, to become more like him, to be transformed, you know. So the ark experience comes from surrender, a willingness to deny self and embrace the will of God, and then the willingness to go deeper into that relationship by seeking more, you know, seeking to know him more and know ourselves more from his perspective so that we can be aligned to that, you know. So, yeah, I think that probably finishes that one. All right.